Welcome to the ongoing Altus Group podcast series, where we cover a wide range of strategies for minimizing your sales and use tax exposure throughout various regions in the U.S. And today we're speaking with Ed Benn, a senior director at Altus Group, about key happenings in the Southeast United States. And Ed, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Matt.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. So as we stated at the top of this podcast, today's topic is really all about sales tax issues in the Southeast. So tell us, what's new in this part of the country?
Well, Matt, you know, today, as we said, we're going to take a look at the Southeast, and I want to have a specific focus on Georgia and Florida. You know, in a lot of ways, these states are similar to others that we've discussed in this series, you know, aggressively auditing taxpayers and pushing tax statutes as far as legally possible. But there's a couple of relatively recent court decisions that I'd really like to discuss today. And these cases are beginning to make their presence felt in current audits. And these decisions are going to be testing the boundaries of nexus and serve to expand a state's ability to tax activities, which arguably occur outside of their borders. And these cases could play pivotal roles in challenges to current nexus standards, shaping methods of future nexus determinations and related filings and reporting requirements. And so the issues involved in these cases are really beginning to test the boundaries of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, indeed. You know, we've all seen the headlines related to nexus and the state's continuing effort to tax remote sellers or their transactions. So tell us more about these court cases that you're referring to.
Well, you know, one case does involve a remote seller, but the other doesn't. So first, let's take a look at the Georgia case that arose from a denied refund claim and whose denial was upheld by the Georgia Court of Appeals last October. Now, here the taxpayer subsequently appealed to the Georgia Supreme Court, who just last week declined to hear the case. And the case I'm referring to is known as Inglet and Stubbs International versus Riley. Now, Inglet and Stubbs is a real property contractor, and they were awarded several federal government contracts for the construction and installation of electrical systems in Afghanistan. And Inglet purchased materials for use in fulfilling these contracts and then stored them in their Georgia warehouse pending shipment to Afghanistan. And they paid about $1.9 million in tax on these materials, and then they applied for a refund of this tax, asserting that they were reselling the materials to the federal government. Now, the refund request was denied. Georgia stated that they felt that Inglet was a contractor, and therefore they were the consumer of the property, not the federal government. So in denying the refund request, the state cited specific statutory language that supported their denial, which stated, each person who orally or in writing or by purchase order contracts to furnish tangible personal property and to perform services under the contract within this state shall be deemed to be the consumer of the tangible personal property and shall pay sales tax at the time of the purchase. Now, I emphasize the words within this state, and that's because in its appeal, Inglet argued that this statute didn't control because the contracts were performed in Afghanistan and the wording of the cited law only applied to contracts performed within this state, that is, the state of Georgia. Now, the Court of Appeals disagreed with this reading of the law, noting that Inglet performed work and services in Georgia when it purchased and stored the materials within Georgia.
Interesting. So how does this decision affect those constitutional issues that you mentioned?
Well, in declining to hear Inglet's appeal, the Georgia Supreme Court let the lower court's ruling stand. And so this raises real concerns of double taxation, which would be a violation of the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. If Inglet is subject to Georgia tax on the materials used in its foreign commerce, there's likely no mechanism in place to take a credit for Georgia taxes that it paid, thereby placing an undue burden on foreign commerce. And we've recently seen the state apply the principles of this case to other taxpayers, resulting in double taxation on transactions that occur in interstate commerce. You know, we currently have a situation where a taxpayer who's not a real property contractor is under audit by Georgia. And they purchased tangible personal property, stored it in its Georgia warehouse for future installation or sale to customers located out of the state. Now, because the taxpayer sometimes installs this property, the state has taken the position that the taxpayer is a real property contractor. And therefore, like with Inglet, the state considers the taxpayer to be a consumer of the purchased property. And as such, it's unable to use a resale certificate to purchase the merchandise. But in addition to not being a real property contractor, our case has some other facts that we believe differentiate it from the Inglet ruling. And one of these is that the taxpayer sometimes merely sells the merchandise to its customers, doesn't install it, and these customers are located in other states. Now, this transfer of title in the other state triggers a taxable event outside of the state of Georgia, and the taxpayer must collect that state's sales tax on the same merchandise upon which Georgia is demanding use tax. So this pyramiding of taxes is a consequence of the Inglet case, and in my opinion, places an unconstitutional burden on interstate commerce. Now, I hope we're able to distinguish this taxpayer from Inglet, allowing us to resolve this situation in a favorable manner. But the recent court rulings and appeal denial by the Georgia Supreme Court doesn't give me a lot of comfort here.
Well, you know, Ed, it's really interesting how state audit departments take these cases and then try to expand them to other taxpayers, essentially in an effort to raise additional revenue.
Yeah, well, that's a good observation, Matt. And, you know, a recent Florida Supreme Court decision reaches some similar conclusions regarding a state's ability to tax transactions that occur wholly outside of its border based on a different set of facts. And I wouldn't be surprised if Florida took this court ruling and began applying it to taxpayers in different industries. Now, the case I'm talking about here is called Florida Department of Revenue versus American Business USA Corporation. Now, here, the Florida Supreme Court reversed a lower court opinion and upheld an assessment against an online seller of flowers and gift baskets. Now, this case resulted from a Florida Department of Revenue proposed tax assessment on American Business for taxes and interest on the company's internet sales transactions. Now, American Business is a for-profit business. It's incorporated in Florida, has a physical location and a principal address in Florida as well. All the company's sales of flowers, gift baskets, and other items of tangible personal property were initiated online. And the company didn't maintain any inventory of these items, but would use florists that were local to the location of the delivery to fill the order. The company charged its customers tax on flowers and other items delivered in Florida by local florists, but it didn't charge its customers sales tax on flowers and other items that were delivered outside of Florida. So the tax assessment was issued by the department pursuant to Florida law, which states specifically that florists that are located in the state are liable for sales tax on sales to retail customers, regardless of where or by whom the items are being delivered. And florists located in this state are not liable for sales tax on payments received from other florists for items delivered to customers in this state.
Interesting, but, you know, in this age of e-commerce, was American Business really a florist or merely a broker who acted to facilitate the sales of flowers and gifts?
Well, the way business is conducted today is certainly a lot different than in times before the internet came into existence. And, you know, remember, American Business didn't maintain any inventory at all. So perhaps it could have been cast as a broker instead of a florist, you know, similar to the way online hotel booking companies are. And if this issue had been brought up in the court, perhaps the outcome would have been different. But this issue wasn't addressed by the court, and the case was argued merely from the viewpoint of whether the imposition of the tax was permissible under constitutional principles. And the court thought that it was, even though its effect was to apply sales tax on a transaction where both the purchaser and the consumer are located in states other than Florida, where the order was fulfilled in a state other than Florida, and where the order was delivered in a state other than Florida. So this is really troubling and leaves lingering constitutional concerns. The potential for double taxation is similar to what we just discussed in the Georgia Inglet case. But with the limited time that we have today, I'm not going to rehash it here. I'd instead prefer to focus on what future potential effects this ruling may have in regards to nexus and sourcing of sales.
Interesting. So, you know, tell us really, what is sourcing of sales then, and how does it play into the nexus issue overall?
Well, this case basically validated the concept of origin sourcing. And under this approach, tax would be due where the sale occurred. Now, historically, destination sourcing has been the general rule of determining where a sale is taxed. So with destination sourcing, the tax is due in the jurisdiction in which title or possession to the property is transferred. And when sales are made in the course of interstate commerce, title generally transfers where the property is shipped to, usually the buyer's destination. So while this Florida ruling was made in the context of the floral industry and the tax laws that specifically apply to its business model, because the court found that the application of the law is constitutional, the court's validation of origin-based sourcing could have far wider implications if Florida and other states began to apply this concept to different industries. So let's use an example that I think everybody can relate to. Let's say that a Maryland resident buys something from Amazon and it's shipped to them from Seattle, Washington. So right now, as things currently stand, Amazon would charge Maryland sales tax on this order. But if Washington were to adopt origin sourcing based upon the Florida Supreme Court's endorsement, Amazon would have to charge Washington sales tax to the Maryland resident. Now, Maryland would be unhappy because they've lost tax revenue. The Maryland resident would rightly be annoyed because they don't even live in Washington. So, you know, they would think, why should their tax dollars go to a state to subsidize that state's budgetary needs? And most individuals wouldn't send any use tax to the state of Maryland if required. So as an individual, the story ends there. But if under the same fact pattern, a Maryland-based business purchased something from Amazon for operational use, you know, Maryland, again, would expect the business to accrue its use tax on the purchase. And the business might be able to then take a credit for Washington taxes paid, so Maryland would still get no revenue from this transaction. And if the business makes a lot of internet purchases from businesses in many different states, this process could quickly become burdensome, cumbersome. And in turn, it could be argued that this would place an undue burden on interstate commerce, and that's not permissible under the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, so it seems that if we left this issue left to the states, we could wind up with a crazy patchwork of nexus standards related to sourcing of sales that would be litigated much the same as these cases, right?
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of where we are now, Matt. You know, so what would really be ideal would be for a federal approach with Congress exercising its power to regulate business between the states and acting to set a uniform nexus standard across the nation. You know, and in this regard, there's been a lot of bills that have been introduced in Congress, you know, the Main Street Fairness Act, the Marketplace Fairness Act, and these bills remain bottled up, waiting for votes or in committees waiting for resolution. You know, there's also the Online Sales Tax Simplification Act, which had been proposed by Bob Goodlatte, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Now, this bill has an origin-based sourcing component, but it would be applied consistently across the country and would eliminate the possibility of double taxation, as we just discussed in our Georgia and Florida examples. Now, the Online Sales Tax Simplification Act would federally change the nexus laws, and it would stop the states from changing laws by themselves individually. But unlike all other proposed bills, this bill would only require a company to understand the sales tax laws of its home state, only collect and remit sales tax based on its home state laws, and only file sales tax returns in its home state, and then only be subject to audit by its home state. The retailer would still need to keep track of where the sales are going to be shipped, because the home state sales tax it would collect would subsequently then be distributed out to the destination states. And this clearinghouse type of process would be handled by the states and not by the retailers. You know, and there are successful models for such an approach already in existence, such as the Interstate Fuel Tax Act and the apportionment of truck registration fees under the International Registration Plan.
Interesting. You know, Congress was asked to act on this back in 1992 in the Quill decision, but they essentially declined to do so. So is there any other avenue that could be taken to solve these issues?
Well, what you're referring to there, Matt, of course, is Quill versus North Dakota, which was a decision in which the U.S. Supreme Court suggested that this is an area for Congress to exercise its right to regulate interstate commerce in a manner that's consistent with the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. And to date, this hasn't happened. Congress has declined to do so. The Supreme Court has declined to hear various appeals on the issue. Now, there's some states that have passed laws that are designed to directly challenge the Quill decision and force this issue back to the Supreme Court. South Dakota, Alabama, and Colorado have all done this, and we might see a future U.S. Supreme Court case that addresses the issue as a result. Now, that's a topic for another day, Matt, so let's stay tuned and see what happens there.
That sounds great, Ed, and what a perfect way to end this podcast. And once again, you've heard an exclusive interview in our Altus Group podcast series, where we cover a wide range of strategies for minimizing your sales and use tax exposure throughout various regions in the U.S. And once again, Ed Benn, Senior Director at Altus Group, was kind enough to share his highly detailed insights about key happenings in the southeast of the United States. And Ed, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Matt. And just to wrap up, you know, taxpayers in the southeast need to pay attention to these cases, you know, because this could be a nexus issue in an audit. So we need to take a look at some strategies to combat that and make sure the states don't assert nexus over transactions that they shouldn't be. Appreciate the time today, Matt.
Likewise, Ed. Thank you so much.
All right. Have a good day.